We're holding on Vogue Onward Bays, 7 lines from the bottom. We started learning yesterday that we said we had a machlokas Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. What we said in the Mishnah, that a mazik has to pay for meitav, meaning that if he's paying with land, he has to pay with the best of his land, or the best of whose land. So we said we had a machlokas Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Shmuel had said it means relative to the best land of the nizik, which means therefore we said if the, even if the mazik has better land, as long as a particular plot of land of his is equivalent in value to the Nizik's best, then he can give him that. There is actually, within that, there is a machlokas who showed him that I mentioned yesterday. What happens, for example, if, so we said, the Gemara had said that if on the other hand, the mazik's ziburis is worth less than the Nizik's idis, then we make him give him the idis. We don't say that he can get away with the ziburis, because the fact is it's not worth as much. If his ziburis was equal to the Nizik's idis, then we would say that we need to. There is a discussion that Rosh brings up a point. You could have a case where neither his idis nor equivalent to the, you have to have basically, he says it has to be equivalent to somebody's idis. Point is, then we had Rabbi Akiva had said that the Pulsik is coming only to tell us, Loi bar kosev el ligwis the nizokim in the idis for kava choymer lehekdish. He said the Pulsik is coming to tell you that a nizik gets paid out of idis and a kava choymer for hekdish. So now we have to figure out what he means with that kava choymer lehekdish. So we said, Rabbi Akiva, I'm a loy bar kosev el ligwis the nizokim in the idis kava choymer lehekdish. My kava choymer lehekdish. What does Rabbi Akiva mean with his statement and a kavachomer for hekdesh? Ilema the nogach tora di dan la tora de hekdesh. Are we talking about a case where, for example, an ox belonging to a regular yid, gored an ox belonging to hekdesh, and you're going to say that the implication is that hekdesh then collects from idis? On the contrary, on the contrary, when the Torah says the concept of that you have to pay for keren, that you have to pay when an animal gores, it uses the expression the ox of his fellow man, which teaches you not a shor of hekdesh, that if your ox gores an ox of hekdesh, then you'll be potter. And the same thing would apply, Rashi says, to all other nizik. In any other cases of mazik as a hekdesh would all be potter. Then on the other hand, Rashi brings a second lotion and says that we're focusing mainly on shur hekdesh. We're not saying, for example, that let's say the animal eats, goes into a field of hekdesh and grazes over there, which was shein that we've been talking about before. Rashi says because on the face of it, you don't really have a field that remains in the possession of hekdesh for any long amount of time. If you have if you declare a field cherem, then usually it's cherem l'koyanim, which means it's given to the koyanim who are on duty and who are in the mishmar of that time. If you give it to Betik Abayis, they're not going to keep it for very long. They're going to find somebody else to sell it to. And eventually it will go to the Kohen. Rashi also adds the point that before you redeem it, there is the concept in the Me'ilah B'Karkois. There's no Me'ilah when it comes to things of land. Now, why Rashi is bringing that matter, that there's no Me'ilah, there's a good deal of discussion about that. One thing is the Marshal says that Rashi may be implying by that if it is something that Me'ilah would apply to, then maybe indeed you would say that Nizik can apply to it, but according to the Solution. But since Me'ilah doesn't apply to land, then neither does the concept of Nizikin. Tosfos also goes and discusses in some detail over here the question of whether Nizikin, Bechlal, pertain to hekdesh in the sense, in other words, like Rashi's first lashon. Never mind keren. If your animal goes and grazes in a field of hekdesh, are you chayav to pay for the nezik? If your animal goes and steps on something belonging to hekdesh and breaks it, are you chayav to pay, etc.? And Tosfa says that apparently not. We find from various limudim that no. Interesting, Rav Shamshon of Ol Hirsch mentions a point in this regard. So he says, first of all, you could talk about various reasons, various balabatish reasons why that's so. Maybe one of them is that we want to demonstrate that hekdesh is after all not like regular property of a head yet. It's on a different level. But he says, you know, here you have, if you want a proof, he says, that the Torah is Minashamayim and it wasn't invented by the Koyanim or something, this very thing. Think of in any human system of law, they're going to treat property of their local, of their government or their local temple or whatever much more seriously and much stronger than anything else. And here, Fakir, the Torah is saying that not. Anyway. So the point is, therefore, so you can't say that it means that if your animal caused damage to Hekdesh, then you have to pay for Meitam. On the contrary, you don't have to pay at all. So rather, we could say, you're talking about that a person says, I pledge to donate a money to Bedek HaBayis, where that money now becomes Hekdesh. If he has the money, then he gives it. But now what happens is, the Osi Gizba V'Shokol Me'idus. Now, suppose we would say that if he doesn't pay up, then the Gizba comes and takes a money's worth of his Idis property and gives that to Hekdesh. The question is, why should that be? Lo Yehei Ela Baal Chayv. After all, at most, we should consider Hekdesh in that regard like a Baal Chayv, or Baal Chayv Bebeinus. And the usual rule is that a Baal Chayv collects only from Beinus, as we learned in Gittin. So why would we assume that Hekdesh is collecting from Idis? Now, obviously, you could answer that, fine, Hekdesh maybe is more stringent in that regard than maybe Hekdesh is more stringent in that regard than a regular person. But actually, the Rashba explains what it is like this. The Rashba makes a different point, that Midaraisa, we know, we learned in the Gifin, Midaraisa, Baal Chayv gets only Ziburis. Here we're talking on Daraisa levels. But still, even Midrabanan, the Baal Chayv is only upgraded to Beninus. Why would Hekdesh get upgraded all the way to Ziburis? Tosfos Rav Meir Peretz makes another point as well. He says, look, given that Minat Torah, Baal Chayv gets only Ziburis, and the Chachamim are upgrading him to Beinonis, and the reason is, Shaloi Tinil Delos Bifnei Loivin, we don't want people to lock their doors and not lend money when he's going to say, look, all I'm going to get out of it is Ziburis anyway. So if we're going to say that Hekdesh is stronger than the original din, fine, we could say that maybe Daraisa Hekdesh could collect only from Ziburis in a case like this, and Midrabanan maybe we would make them and say they should collect from Beinonis. There's no particular reason to say that we should upgrade them all the way to Idis. So therefore, what does Rav Akiva mean? How could we say that in that case then you're going to be collecting, the Hekdesh is going to be collecting from Idis? You're going to answer, maybe Rav Akiva holds that in general a Baal Chayv collects from Idis. Now you could say, even so, the question, so maybe Rav Akiva holds that. Maybe Rav Akiva holds that a Baal Chayv regularly collects from Idis. Still, even if that were the case, that wouldn't mean that Hekdesh would, because Ikala Mifrach, because you could shrug up. You could say, you're going to try to learn by a Mamatzinu, that if a Hedyot collects from Idis, then so should Hekdesh. No, Mala Baal Chayv Sheken Yofa Koyfa B'Nizokin. Because consider, a Baal Chayv has a stronger position as far as Nizokin. We just said, your ox injures somebody else's ox, you're responsible to pay. How do you compare it to Hekdesh, where their power is weaker, where, as we said, if your ox damages an ox of Hekdesh, you don't have to pay. So therefore, it wouldn't work. On what basis would we say that Hekdesh is going to be able to collect on a debt that's owed to them, Davka from Idis? So the answer is, the Gemara answers back, La'olam v'nogach Torah didam l'Torah de Hekdesh. We're going to go back to our original assumption. We're talking about that an ox of a Hedyot gored and injured and or killed an ox of Hekdesh. Now you're going to ask, what about, didn't we say before, Shor Re'ehu? The answer is, Rabbi Akiva Savala K'Rab Shimon Menasya. We could say, maybe that Rabbi Akiva holds like Rabbi Shimon Menasya, where Rabbi Shimon Menasya takes that word, Re'ehu, and takes it in the opposite sense. He says, Fakir, it doesn't mean Shor Re'ehu means in the case of a Shor of Hekdesh, you're potter. On the contrary, it means that in the case of Shor of Hekdesh, you're chayev more than you would have been under normal circumstances. Namely, that he says, if an ox of Hekdesh gores an ox belonging to Hedyot, potter, then Hekdesh is potter from having to pay. And the other way around, if a regular person's shur injures an ox of hekdesh, he says bein tam, bein mur, mashalim nezek shalim. Whether the animal is tam or mur, you always pay nezek shalim. So he would say when the pasuk says shorei ehu, and it draws a distinction between if it's tam, you're paying half, and if it's mur, you're paying the full thing. That distinction would only apply if the animal that yours gored was itself one of cholin. But if it is one of hekdesh, then you're paying nezek shalim regardless. Now, Rav Shimon ben Menasseh granted may not hold as far as the other kinds of hezek that those apply to hekdesh, maybe only over here because of the pasuk shor re'ehu. Tosfos again points out that the fact is there are different other limudim to say that this concept doesn't necessarily apply to other nizakim. But the point is, Rabbi Akiva can hold like that, and therefore when he says v'kavu chomer lehekdesh, we could say that it means that there is a case where hekdesh is collecting from idis, and that would be his kavu chomer would be as follows, we're saying a nizek regularly collects from idis, and kavu chomer, that hekdesh, where Rav Shimon ben Menasseh is saying you don't even draw the distinction between tam and mord, then they're getting from idis. Well, the question is, Yehochi, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Akiva. Well, then let's go back to the original machlokas, Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. Mimai de beidis de nizik v'ziburis de mazik plegi. To begin with, why did we bring in the machlokas? Because we were trying to figure out whose idis do we use as the baseline. We use the nizik's idis, and we say, therefore, if the mazik has idis, that is, if the mazik has idis, has ziburis, that's worth as much as the nizik's idis, then he can give that to him. Or do we say he has to give from his own idis? So why do we have to understand the machlokas that way? Duma de kula alam b'de nizik treninan. Maybe both of them agree that, that we go according to the nizik's idis. So therefore, so in that kind of case where the mazik only had, where the mazik ziburis is equivalent to the nizik's idis, then you can give him that, and that's good enough. But we could say, maybe the machlokas is strictly on the point between Rav Shimon ben Menasseh and the Chachamim. Rabbi Akiva savak Rav Shimon ben Menasseh, Rabbi Shmuel savak Rabbanan. Maybe the machlokas is only as far as the matter of hekdesh. Rashi explains, in other words, Rabbi Akiva has heard Rabbi Shmuel talking only about a head yet, implying, in other words, Rabbi Shmuel is saying, but when it comes to Nezek of Hekdesh, I'm going to pater him. And Rabbi Akiva says, no, that Hekdesh has to be able to collect from Idis. So maybe that's the whole Machloikas. But as far as whose Idis we use, maybe we use strictly the Nezek's Idis always to determine what kind he has to pay. The answer is, imken, my loy bo hakosu. Yeah, but in that case, what would Rabbi Akiva mean with his loy bo hakosu, which means that he's talking about, he's saying, the posik is coming only for this purpose. In other words, that according to the way you're saying, that they would both agree that the posik, mate of Sadeho, mate of Kami Yishalim, means you're going according to the nizik, the machlokas would only be what happens in a side case involving hekdesh. Loy bo hakosu suggests that Rabbi Akiva is actually arguing with Rabbi Shmuel on the meaning of the actual pasuk, meaning whether we go according to mazik or whether we go according to nizik. Furthermore, what would he mean with this kavachoyim lahekdesh? Because if Rabbi Akiva is saying, we're makel on the mazik in the case where the nizik was a hedyot, and we're saying he only has to pay from his own ziburis. So what are we saying? We said before, Rabbi Akiva, if he holds like Rav Shimon ben Menasseh, it means he wants to upgrade the status of hekdesh. But here, doesn't it come out that he's still saying that hekdesh does not have the strongest possible position, because he's saying that in terms of what kind of field he can give, that he can get away with giving only ziburis. Hekdesh happens to own now land, which it's for them it's idis, and for the mazik is ziburis, and Rabbi Akiva will allow him to pay with that. So then it comes out a kula as far as hekdesh, not a chumrah. And aren't we trying to say that Rabbi Akiva is making a chumrah as far as hekdesh? That's how Rashi learns. Tosfos points out that the fact is we have a chumrah. Rabbi Shmuel would say he's potter completely, and Rabbi Akiva is saying that he's being mechayiv him nezek shalim. Fine, he's not saying he has to give the best of his idis, but he's still being machmer on him. So what's wrong with that being a kavachomer? So Tosva says, fine. The question is, my kavachomer lahekdesh means that Reb Shimon, after all, how does Reb Shimon and Manasseh know, and how in turn does Reb Akiva know that you're paying hekdesh nezek sholem is from the pasuk shor re'evu, not from the pasuk mate of sadeh or mate of kaimer. So instead of answering kavachomer lahekdesh, he should say, I have a different posiv to show that you have to pay hektish and that you have to pay idis. Why is he saying, v'kavachomer lahektish, as if the only way he knows it is from a kavachomer, when in fact he's learning it from a different source?
No, one source is better than the other one?
No, it's just he shouldn't be using the word kavachomer lahektish, which implies that that's where I know it from. So he should say, Rabbi Shmuel, in other words, Tosfos says, Rabbi Shmuel would agree that with the basic idea that you have to pay for Meitav. He would just say, in the case of Hekdesh, you're not paying at all because Shor Re'ehu Omer Rahman. Well, then Rabbi Akiva should answer, and that's not what Shor Re'ehu means. So, but instead, why is he saying Kavachoyim on a Hekdesh? Implying that the only way he knows this is from a Kavachoyim. And furthermore, there's a third reason why we can't say that Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel's machloekas is only on the point of whether we go according to the Nizek's or the Mazik's Meitav, whether the machloekas is only about what happens if the damage is done to Hekdesh. Because Ha'omer Rabbi Ashi Tanya Behedya, Rabbi Ashi says we actually have a clear brisa that says that their machloekas is on Idis to Mazik versus Idis to Nizek. Mate of Sedeo, mate of Kami Yishalim. That means mate of Sedeo Shal Nizik or mate of Kami Shal Nizik, Divrei Rabbi Shmuel. So Rabbi Shmuel is going to say that means the best of the field and the vineyard of the Nizik. So therefore, in other words, like we said before, even if the Mazik has better property, he's not obligated to pay with that. He can pay with his Ziburis, which is equal in value to the Nizik's Idis. Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Akiva, I'm a mate of Sedeo Shal Mazik, a mate of Kami Shal Mazik. And Rabbi Akiva says you're going to go according to the Mazik and make him pay using that kind of meitav, even though it's far better than anything the Nizik has. So we see clearly that their machlokas is on that. So they may be arguing on the matter of hektish as well. But if so, that would be a side argument. So that would be a side argument. It is true. Since Rabbi Akiva says v'kavachoyim ala hektish, it is going to have to mean that he's saying that that hektish is going to collect from something better than it would have otherwise, but that's not going to be in the case of Nizokin. That's going to be the case that's going to be some other kind of case, because when it comes to Nizokin, maybe it would. I mean, Rav Shimon Manasseh is saying that when it comes to hezek of hektish, you're chayav, the halacha is your potter. So therefore, Rav Akiva's kavachoyim of a hektish would be fine. He holds like Rav Shimon Manasseh, but in that. We would say that not so, and hektish doesn't collect at all. Okay. So that's that then. So we've established what we mean when we say meitav ha'aretz. We have machlokas Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. The halacha is like Rabbi Akiva. Fine. So now going on to the next point. So let's see. So now the Gemara continues. Romi le abaya le roba. Siv meitav sedeo meitav kami yishalim. So now we have this pasuk that says that you have to pay with the best of your field and your vineyard. And that implies meitav ein midachrin aloy. So the implication is you always have to pay with meitav. You always have to pay with the best of your property. The problem is, Vatanya, Yoshiv Rabbis Shova Kesef Afilu Subin. Don't we have a brisa that says, now when the Pasuk says that a person has to pay, in one of the cases, specifically by Bur, it says the expression, Bala Bur Yishalim, the owner of the Bur has to pay, Kesef Yoshiv Liv Olav. He gives back money to the owner of the animal that fell in there. And we learn from that word, Yoshiv, L'rabbis shova kesef, that comes to include that he can pay not only with kesef, he can also pay with shova kesef. So, in other words, Rashi says it includes any kind of hashova, anything where he's repaying the person the value, even if it's not land, even if it's not money, Rabbi Nochanan says it says slightly differently, that since it says Yoshiv, the implication is that as long as it's anything that the Mazik is giving, as long as it's anything the Mazik is giving away, then it's valid. Ba'afilu Subin, even if it's bran. So even a person has a pile of bran that was previously extracted from wheat, then he could give that, if he has enough of that, to pay for the damage, then he could pay with that.
Bran would be.
So said that was that. That's shavu kesef, but that's certainly not meitav, but certainly not the best item that he has. So so what is it? Does he have to pay with the best? Does he have to pay with the best, or does he not have to pay with the best? And the answer is first. The answer is like kasha can be daita can baal korfa. The answer would be one where it's midaita, meaning where the mazik is paying on his own rather than making the other guy schlep to based in. Then you can say, you know what, I'm paying you voluntarily, rather than having to go through the whole rigmarole, then you have to take my subin. Kan ba'al korchai, as opposed to if he's forced to pay, if he actually makes him go to Beis Din, then we're going to say he has to pay money, or then he has to pay with money or with land. Actually, the Shittim Kovetis points out about that, one second, who says the mazik may not know the halachas, he may not realize that in this particular case, he's required to pay b'chlal. How can you say that he voluntarily says, you know what, I caused damage, I have to pay? So rather, the Shittim Kovetis says the distinction would be slightly different. Not whether they have to go to Beis Din, but whether Beis Din forces him to pay. In other words, once they go to Beis Din, and Beis Din says, yes, this is a nezik, and then you have to pay him, does he say, okay, I'll pay, versus does he say, no, I don't want to, and Beis Din has to schlep out the whole thing from him. Then we could say, then they're not going to take suvin from him, then they want to take something more valuable. Yeah. And in fact, Oma Ula Breda Rabbi Loi De Kanami. In fact, Ula Breda Rabbi Loi says, you can actually see that in the word of the Pasuk. Yichtiv Yishalim, because after all, the Pasuk says Yishalim, and that would imply Baal Korchai, which would imply that he's paying Baal Korchai, and that says in connection with Meitav, Meitav Sadeo, Meitav Karami, Yishalim. So that would imply, when is there the Meitav Sadeo, Meitav Karami, when Yishalim, when he's being forced to pay it. On the contrary, though, Abai says, if it said Yeshulam, which is a passive form, that would mean that somebody else is making him pay. Yeshalim, the fact is it says Yeshalim midaite mashma, and that implies it's being done with his das, that he agreed to pay, whether like Rashi that Bechlal without even going to Beis Din, or like Shittim Kubetzes that fine, they had to go to Beis Din, but immediately Beis Din said you have to pay, and he right away pulls out something and pays. But how can we say that the heter to give subin is only when he's doing it voluntarily, when the pasuk Yishalim implies that he's doing it voluntarily. And they would say Meitav, that he has to give the best. So Elo, Amar Abaye Kidemar. Rather, Abaye says you can answer this contradiction between Meitav versus Subin. You can answer it based on something that my Rebbe discussed. Abaye's Rebbe is Rabbah. Rabbah was Abaye's uncle. He raised him. He also taught him. So throughout Shas, Abaye was an orphan. Abaye was doubly orphan. We learned in Kedushin. So his uncle Rabbah raised him. So he grew up in Abaye's. He grew up in Rabbah's household. We have a few stories here and there in Gemara about that. And he was also Abaye's Rebbe. So therefore, Abaye throughout Shas calls him Mar, meaning my Rebbe. Anyway, so Abaye says that Abaye says based on what my Rebbe, on what Rabbi explained on the following case, then we can understand what is the case where you have to pay with Meitav Sadeo, Meitav Karmai, versus what are the cases where you can pay with something of lesser value, such as Subin. So like this, Ditanya, we learn in a Braisa. Suppose a person has houses or fields or vineyards. Tosfos points out, when we say houses, now we're going to talk about over here, the din that we're going to deal about over here is when a person is entitled to receive Maisa Ani. Now, some basic facts we need to know for this purpose are, if a person has 200 zuz, he's not allowed to collect Maisa Ani. There's a rem, as they say for this, I think Marashah brings it someplace, the word tzedakah is gematria 199. So therefore, if a person has 199, he can collect tzedakah and maisa oni. But if once he has 200, then no. The din is when he has less than 200, he can take, then you can give him a whole amount in one lump sum. You can have 1,000 zuz of tzedakah or of ma'aser oni, and he can take that because right now he's below 200. So obviously I'll bring him well above 200, but he can still take that because it's all in one lump sum. But if you give him one and brings it up to 200, then he can't take any more. The Yerushalmi, by the way, tells a story involving a Talmud of Rebbe, who Rebbe would give him his Maiso Oni. So every 3 years, Rebbe would give Maiso Oni, and Rebbe, being very rich, he had a lot of produce, so he would give all his Maiso Oni to this particular Talmud. Some of the other Talmudim got jealous, and they decided to play a mean trick on him. So one time, this Talmud had close to 200 zuz to his name, but not quite. So one time they called him aside and they said, we realize you're so poor and everything here. Take this zuz as tzedakah. And then when he counts up, he finds he has 200. So he goes to Rebbe that day and he's very upset, realizing he's not going to be able to get the ma'aser oni. Rebbe asks, finds out what happened. He's not going to go punish those bacharim or yungalites or whatever for doing it. But what he does is he tells some other yungalites from the yeshiva, go take this guy to a restaurant and make sure that he goes and buys something and eats. So he spent some of his money. Now when he comes back to Rebbe, he has less than 200, and therefore he's able to get the ma'aser oni again. And Rebbe uses the expression over there that first group of Talmudim are an example of one of the people the Gemara talks about, like they use the Torah in the wrong way. They're Makas Krushin or something like that. They're misusing the Torah in order to prevent somebody from getting what he should get. Anyway, the point is, So now we have another din. Tosfos points out the fact is, even if a person has more than 200, but part of it is the house that he lives in, we don't require him to sell his house in order to collect ma'aser oni. So here, when we say he has houses, we mean other houses that he owns, that he rents out or does whatever with them. Anyway, suppose a person has assets like that, so he has more than 200 zuz. The enim motzil moichron, but he can't find anybody to sell them to. So in other words, exactly that. He has these assets, but he can't find anybody to sell them to. Machilin oise maiso oni ad mechza. The din would be, he's allowed to eat maiso oni up to half. Now, what do we mean by half? Actually, as we go through the sugya over here, we're going to talk about, there are several different ways of explaining this case over here. So Rashi himself gives two explanations. So what it means, first of all, the case is, we're talking about, he's not an oni per se, because he has all these assets. But right now, he can't find anybody to buy them. So now, when we say machilin oise ad mechze, means we can give him up to 100 zuz worth of ma'aser sheni. As far as his property, we're going to tell him, go sell it for 100. We're going to tell him, this property of yours is worth 200. And because of that, you shouldn't be getting ma'aser sheni. We understand you can't find anybody to buy it at 200 zuz. Fine. Discount it. Announce that you're willing to sell it for 100 zuz. And we'll give you 100 zuz of ma'aser oni. And that way you won't lose out. That way you still have 200. So that's one explanation. After we talk about the case, and the Gemara delineates the details of it, we'll talk about, there are several other explanations of Rishonim, what's going on here. So now Abaye says, my Rebbe, Rabba, was wondering and discussing about this point. Hey, Fidon, what exactly is the scenario? Are we talking about the prices for everybody have gone down? The Didei Nami Zobadayu, and his also has gone down. So in other words, the reason why he can't find anybody to buy his property for 200 is because nobody's buying property for 200 of that size. Well then, it's not his fault. Afilo Tuva Nami Lispile. So then they should give him even more than 100 zuz, because after all, right now his property is worth less than 200 zuz. So objectively, because in other words, everybody is saying that property like this is worth now less than 200. So therefore, you should be entitled to get as much ma'aser oni as he wants. Does zul de kula al manami? Because after all, everybody's property has gone down in value. Ela no. So we have to say, the oikir aras of de kula alma. We can be talking about everybody else's property is still selling at high prices. The didei, but what we're saying is, as far as his, they have gone down in price. Idi the eye of Nafik Azuzi, because he's going in and out and looking for buyers and looking to sell, that itself, Zol Are, that itself caused the price to go down. People realize, in other words, that he's desperate to sell, and therefore people will say, we're not going to buy it for full value, we're only going to buy it for a discount. Well, then, afilu purta nami loy, then why loy lispule? Then they shouldn't give him any ma'aser on him, because after all, his property is worth 200 zuz. And a person who has 200 zuz can't collect my sarmi. The omer mara law. So now my rebbe, rabba, said on this. Loit tzricha debiyomin nissen yakra arasa. You could have a case where in nissen time, in b'chol during the summer, land is worth more. Because when a person buys land that time of year, very soon the agricultural season is going to begin, and he's going to be able to start using it. He'll be able to start plowing it, Rashi describes, in the summertime. He'll be able to plant it Tishrei Cheshvan time, and therefore he's getting the use of it already this year. So he's getting a more immediate use, therefore people are willing to buy it at a higher price. Over Yemet Tishrei, Zol Arasa, meanwhile, if you sell the same plot of land in Tishrei, it's going to be worth less. Because if you sell it in Tishrei, practically speaking, he has to wait a whole year till he can start really making much use of it. So therefore, he's going to buy it at a discount. Tosfos points out, what about as far as houses? On the face of it, houses don't have a defined season like that. But Tosfos says, fine, you still have, though, there are places where there's a certain season for house rentals, and therefore, again, you sell it outside of that season. Like this, the other person could more easily find the tenant for it right away, sometimes a year, than the other. For example, again, you sell it Nissan time, it's during the summertime, it's not raining, people will more easily move. As opposed to you sell it Tishrei time, which is the beginning of the rainy season, we find in Bava Metzia that in connection with the halachas of landlords and tenants, it mentions over there that in general you don't have the right to kick out a tenant during the winter time without a certain amount of notice, because it may be harder for him to move during the winter when it's all rainy and everything is booked up. So therefore, say yes, with houses as well, Tosfos is saying you do have where there's a certain season for them. Anyway, the point is, so now, like this, the Kula Alma Natri Ad Nissen Rezamni, most people wait until Nissen to sell their land, because then they'll get a higher price for it. Vahai, this guy, Hoyovitz Turichale Zuzi, since he needs money, Zabin Kedahashka, he's selling it at the current price of Tishrei. Now he's selling out at the current price. Yeah, he's selling out at the current price of Tishrei. So therefore, so we can't really call him an oni, because after all, a different time of year, this property is going to be worth 200. You can't really call him an osher, because the fact is nobody's going to buy it at 200 for this at this time of year. Therefore, ad palga urcha lemezal. Therefore, we can assume that up to half will be willing to discount the property. So it's normal for him to discount the property. So the price that people will pay for the property is half of what it is in Tishrei than it is in Nissan. Therefore, we can say, fine, your property is worth only half as much now. Okay, that's to be expected. That's how the market works. Therefore, so we'll give you 100 zuz of ma'aser ani to compensate for that. So that way you're selling your property now in Tishrei and you're getting only 100 for it. We'll give you 100 of Maisa Oni to compensate, and that way you're not losing out. Today, Lav Urcha Lemezal, but it's not normal for the price to go to less than half during Tishrei. Therefore, we can't the amount that we can give him a Maisa Oni at 100, which is going to be half the value of the property. So that's how Rabbah explained it. So now Abaya is going to go and use that to explain our case with Nizokin. But before we do that, we have to discuss there are several other explanations among Rishonim of the scenario over here. So Rashi, having explained again the first case over here, is that the first explanation that Rashi had said was, we are talking about a person who basically is poor, but he has assets that are worth 200 zuz. So in other words, the question is, so if he were to sell those assets, he would have 200 cash on hand, and that's it. But 200 doesn't allow him to collect ma'aser oni, only less than that. So now the question is, he can't even sell them for 200. So what do we do? So we said, sell it for 100, and we'll give you 100 of ma'aser oni, and there you have your 200. That was Rashi's first explanation. Now Rashi brings a second explanation of Lishna Achrina, We're not talking about a poor person. We're talking about a rich person. So he has plenty of assets. But the problem is he's cash poor. He doesn't have money right now to go and buy food for himself. So he has all these assets, the batim sodas akrum him, but he can't find anybody to buy them even for half their value. So in other words, if he was able to sell them, it was 200 worth, and he can sell it for 100, we would tell him, go ahead and do that and raise money for yourself for food that way. But because now people are not even willing to buy his 200 for 100, then therefore we tell him, fine, we'll give you a break, we'll give you maisoni temporarily, because after all, you need food to eat temporarily. At this point, you're considered poor, kind of. So now then the Gemara would be saying, well, why? On the face of it, if you're talking about that everybody's prices have gone down, if it's a makas medina, then he didn't do anything wrong. So even if he's able to sell them at a discount, but even if tuva, Rashi explains in the second explanation, tuva and purta doesn't mean more or less maisoni. It means even if he's able to sell them at less of a discount. So let's say it's 200 and he's able to sell it for 150. Fine, but if everybody is only able to sell it at 150, then why shouldn't we temporarily give him maisa oni until the price goes back up to 200, so he can sell it at a normal market value? After all, it's not his fault that it went down. It's makas medina.
So there shouldn't be
any limit. He takes maisa oni. Period. He takes maisa oni as much as he needs to eat. Because according to the first lashon, the point was we're talking about a poor person. We want to get him to 200. According to the second explanation, we're talking about a rich person. He has a lot more than 200 in assets, but he doesn't have right now food. He doesn't have cash he doesn't have cash available to go and buy food. So now, on the face of it, then the Gemara is asking if no matter what he's able to, as long as he's not able to sell them for their full value, why should we penalize him and say they have to sell it at a discount b'chlal? Why can't he wait until the market improves and what should be worth 200 is worth 200 again, and then let him sell it? Meanwhile, we'll support him with maisoni. And if, on the other hand, you're talking about that it's something only with him, then that only his property has gone down in value, shouldn't we consider him a pesheya? Maybe he shouldn't be so making it so obvious that he's desperate to sell, and therefore causing everybody to say, you know what, we're only going to buy from him at a discount, because sooner or later he's going to have to give in. So and then Rabbi explains on that. No, what we're talking about is, we are talking about, again, this distinction between Nisan and Tishrei. We're not talking about where the price for everybody has gone down permanently or unexpectedly or whatever. We're talking about one of those regular market fluctuations between Nisan and Tishrei. It's seasons, right. If he's able to sell his property for half the value, then we're not going to give him Maisa Oni at all. Because we're going to say, look, it's normal. Tishrei time, all properties go down in value. Therefore, go ahead and sell your property at the Tishrei discount, if that's what you need, if you need to raise money for food. If you can't find anybody even now, Tishrei time, who's willing to buy your property for 100 for half its value, then fine, we'll give you Maisa Oni. Not to bring you up to 200. You're well over 200, but because otherwise you have no food to eat b'chlal. So that's Rashi's second explanation. Rashi prefers the first explanation. So now, so far, that gives us two. Now you have Tosfos points out that the Rif has a different girsa in the Gemara over here. Tosfos does, the Rif does agree with Rashi's second explanation that we are talking about, an Oshir. That we are talking about a rich person, so not like Rashi's first explanation that we're talking about a poor person whose assets amount to only 200. So now the Rif's understanding is that we're talking about a Rif's understanding then is that we're talking about a when we say ad mechta means that means similar to. So similar to Rashi, the Rif's explanation is kind of a hybrid of Rashi's two explanations. We are talking about an Oshir, like Rashi's second explanation, but when we say Ad Mechta means that once he finds somebody who's willing to buy them for at least half their price, and until then we'll give him Maisa Oni. So actually the Rif's explanation is fairly similar to Rashi's second explanation, but the distinction would be that if he can find somebody who will buy them for at least half, then we make him sell that. But and if and on the other hand, we would say the other way around. The argument goes that on the contrary, if everybody's prices have gone down, why should we give him anything at all? Rashi had said in that case the makas medina. The Rif would say fakir, because everybody's has gone down. Well, that's the new market value. So in that case, then why are you expecting to sell at 200 when the fact is nobody's buying it for 200 b'chlal now because the market has changed. And if you say, and if you're saying that only his has gone down, why shouldn't he have to sell at a discount at all? Why don't they give him Meister shit? Why don't they give him Meister only temporarily until he's able to sell it for its full value? So the Rif's explanation is a little bit of a hybrid between Rashi's two explanations. And then you have, in addition, the Rambam holds another way that we are talking about, an Osher. And what we say is Mechze means similar to Rashi's first explanation. We're going to give him 100 worth of Maaser Ani, and then he'll sell his property at half its value. So you have four different ways of understanding what the Gemara is saying over here. And Shulchan Aruch, actually, what it brings is that the Shulchan Aruch basically brings, like the Rambam, that if he has karka, if he sells it during the winter time, he's going to have to sell it at a discount. If he waits till the summertime, he'll be able to sell it for full price. We don't require him to sell it right away. We'll give him up to half its value in Maaser Sheni, in Maaser Ani, and then that way he'll be able to sell only when the season comes. He'll be able to wait until Nissan and sell it for the full price, and then. And the Rambam brings that Yesh Omerim, which is again the Rashi's second explanation, that it means we only give him until he can find somebody to buy his karka for half the value. So again, are we talking about that we give him 100 worth of Maaser Ani, which is the way that Rambam learns, or do we mean that we give him Maaser Ani until he can find somebody who's willing to buy his property at half its value? Which was Rashi's explanation.
But we don't make him go less than half.
We don't make him go less than half, no matter what. Anyway, so you have several different ways of explaining the scenario over here. Anyway, the point is, Abaye is saying, now getting back to our matter of Nizokin. So Abaye says, V'hochanami, gaba Nizokin. So now we can go back to Nizokin, and we can, now that we have Rabba's point, that the value of karka fluctuates at different times of year, and you can have karka which is worth more at one time of year and less at another, so now we can use that to also explain this matter of, again, we left off with the question that here the Torah says you have to pay with Meitav Sedeo or Meitav Karmel, but on the other hand, we can say that you can pay with any Shova Kesef, Batil of Subin, that you can pay even with grain. So we're trying to figure out that. So now Abaye says, based on what we said as far as fluctuations in the value of Karka, now we can understand what's going on over here. V'hochanami gaben Nizokin. So it's like this. Dine v'idis, the din of the Torah is that the Nizek is supposed to get Idis, however we define Idis, as we said before, like Rabbi Shmuel or like Rabbi Akiva. Now, the E Omalei Ihu, suppose that the Nizek says, Habli Benis Tfei Purta, give me a little bit extra Benis. In other words, he might say like this, you Mazik owe me 1,000. So by rights, you should have to give me 1,000 worth of your Idis, which is going to be, let's say, 10 acres. Instead, I'd rather take Beninus, and instead you'll give me 1,000 worth of Beninus. So it'll be a larger amount of Karka. It'll still, instead of 10 acres, it'll be 12 acres. Because Beninus is worth less than Idis. So he wants to propose that. Omerlei, so now the Mazik can tell him no. If you're willing to take, according to your din, that you're willing to take Idis, then you have to take it according to the current price. The Eloi, if you want to take something else, you want to take Beninus, then we're going to reevaluate it, not based on the current price, but rather based on the higher price, which is going to be a Nissan. In other words, the scenario would be the Nezek, let's say, took place in Tishrei, or maybe not the Nezek itself, but rather, let's say, the Hamodaladin, right, the actual case in Beisdin, took place in Tishrei. Right now, in Tishrei time, Idis is, the value of Idis is such that it would take 10 acres to pay off the debt. So now the guy instead is proposing, let me get 12 acres of Beninus instead. So you can tell him, no, if you want Beninus, we're not going to consider the fact that Beninus is now worth less.
and therefore that I need more baininess to give you. Rather, we're going to consider that baininess itself is going to go up in value this in time, and therefore, instead of giving you 12 acres, I'm only going to have to give you 6 acres, because the price is going to be twice as high for the baininess in Nissan. So if it was Idis, fine. Look, the Torah tells me I have to give you Idis, so therefore I can't play around with Nissan versus Tishrei prices. I have to give you right now my ox injured yours in Tishrei or whatever, or my ox grazed in your field in Tishrei, so I have no choice. I have to give you according to the current price of the Idis. But you want to change and take bainness, then you're going to have to take at the price that it's going to be later on. So now Abaya said that could be what we're learning from Yoshev Rabbis Shava Kesef after the Subin, that he doesn't always have to give Idis. He could in fact give Bainanus, but he's entitled to say that it should only be a Shava Kesef, it should only be a lesser amount of Bainanus according to the value that it will have later this year. So you could explain it that way. So actually, the Chidush Harin makes an interesting point. You have to ask, what is the real value of this property? Is the real value of it the Nissan price or the Tishrei price? If it goes up and down every year, then you have to ask, which is the real market value of it? And he explains like this. When the Nizik wants to get Idis, then you could say, but Pashtus, why does he want Idis? Because as the Gemara says further down on the Amud, Idis is easier to sell. But Pashtus, the Nizik doesn't need a new field to start plowing and planting and then cultivating and whatever. He wants cash on the barrelhead. So therefore, he's going to say, fine, let me get Idis. It'll be much easier to find somebody to buy it. And therefore, I'm going to turn around and right away sell it. Therefore, we can say you go according to the current price. As opposed to if he's getting Bainanus, but Pashtus, you could say that he doesn't plan to sell it, because why would he want Bainanus? Then he should want Idis, and then it's easier to sell. That is more likely that he himself plans to hold on to it long term. Well, in that case, the Mazik has the right to say, well, long term, then let's consider long term prices, and in this and then the price will go up. So that would be a way of explaining it, that's Abaya. But Rav Acha bar Yaakov says that can't be. After all, then it comes out that you're weakening the power of the Nizik when it comes to Bainanus and Ziburis. That again, we're saying if they get from Bainanus or Ziburis, they're going to get less than they otherwise should. What do you mean? Dirachmana omimi Meitab. The Torah says you have to pay from Meitab. The Torah is giving them a stronger position and saying they can collect from Meitab. And you're going to say that for Bainanus and Ziburis that they're not going to be able to collect the coins at the current price. What's the logic? If the Torah is trying to strengthen their position, we should assume their position is strong across the board. And that means not like the Svara that we just said from the Chidush Harim. No matter what, whatever kind of property he wants to collect from, we should always consider the real value of the property, which is what it'll be worth in Nissan, which is not the real value, the current value, rather than having to consider the later value, which is going to be less. It was going to be more per acre, and therefore that he should collect less. Because after all, the Torah is trying to strengthen his position. If you want to compare the case of a nizik. And if you want to compare Rabba's case involving the guy with Maisa Oni, and you want to compare that to a case involving collecting from somebody else's field, don't compare it to a Nizik, because Rav Acha bar Yaakov saying a Nizik should always have the upper hand, because the Torah is giving him the upper hand by telling him he can collect from Idis. Rather, if you want to compare it to a Baal Choy, you want to compare Rabba's din about the difference between Nissan and Tishrei prices, compare it to the case of the Baal Choyv. Baal Choyv dini b'beinness, we know that Baal Choyv is entitled midrabbanon to collect from beinness, midaraisa only ziburis, midrabbanon he collects from beinness. So again, you could have a case where the Baal Choyv says, look, you owe me 1,000. You would have had to pay me with 12 acres of Bainanus. Instead, why don't you give me 15 of Ziburis? So then, Omale,
Tosfos, by the way, brings a girsa. There were manuscripts that had a girsa that maybe he's also saying instead, or give me less idis. But Tosfos says no, he wouldn't even have the right to ask for less idis because he wouldn't even have the right to ask for idis at all. He's a baal choiv. He only gets bainis. So the same thing says Rabbi Achba Yaakov. So the loiver can say omale. He can say ishak kedinah. If you want to take according to your din, you want to take bainis shkil kedahashta. Take it according to the current price. Be loy, and if you want to do ziburis instead, shokel ki yoker de lakame, then take according to the more expensive value of the ziburis later on this year, and therefore I'm going to have to give you less ziburis. So Rabbi Achba Yaakov is saying, sure, you can use this idea of rabbis about Nissan versus Tishrei prices, but not as far as a nizik, but rather as far as a baal choy. Because by a nizik, the Torah is clearly trying to make him in the strongest position possible, telling us that he can collect from Meitav. There's no reason that we should say that if he wants to collect from Beninus or Ziburis, that he shouldn't be able to collect at the current value and get more of it. You're going to say that svara, that whether he means to hold on to it or whether he means to sell it, it's a nice chaf, says Rav Achba Yaakov, but that doesn't necessarily change the deal. However, the master thought of Achba Breidir of Ikka. But Rav Achba Breidir of Ikka says even that doesn't work. Im kein na alta delos b'fnei loivin. In that case, if you're not going to allow the Baal Choyv to collect more ziburis instead of less bainness, and you're going to tell him if you want to collect ziburis, you're not going to get very much of it, then na'alta delos b'fnei loivin. And then you're going to lock the door in front of loivin. In other words, you're going to discourage people from lending money in the first place. The omelet, because after all, the malva then would say, ilu havali zuzi, if I had enough money, have a shakli kedahashta, I would take, I could have bought this amount of ziburis right now. I want 15 of ziburis. If I had the money available right now, then I could have chosen to buy 15 of ziburis instead of 12 of bainness. Hashta the zuzi gabach. Now the only reason is because the money is by you, and you're not paying. You want me to only be able to get the amount of ziburis that I would be able to buy with this money later on in the year, then I'm losing out, then I shouldn't have lent you the money in the first place. So again, the idea is, given that the whole purpose of giving the malva bainanis is shalotino delos b'fnei loivin, then you don't want to have that. He's going to say that I lose out by lending you money. So you do have a point that Mephoshim bring up. There is a concept that the person can say, sometimes a person can say, efshi v'takonas chachamim. Sometimes a person can say, you know what, the takona of the chachamim was made for my benefit, I don't want that benefit, I don't want to take advantage of it. And in fact, later on in the sugya, Tosfos says that after all, if he wants to collect from ziburis, he's entitled to. The other guy can't say no. My ziburis is completely reserved for me. He can give him ziburis if he wants. We can talk about prices and all, but the basic idea. Anyway, so why doesn't he say ef shibat takonas chachamim? You know what? The chachamim said that I should collect bainis. I'd rather not. I'd rather stick with the original takana and get ziburis, and therefore I should be entitled on a daraisa level. I would have been entitled to 15 acres of ziburis. So why shouldn't I get that now? Why can't he say that? So the Shit Mokobetzis brings, because you can't say Ef Shibetakonis Chachamim, you can say that when you're being machzik in mammon that you have. Then you can say Ef Shibetakonis Chachamim, I don't want to have to give that away because of a Takonis Chachamim. Here we're talking about something that he doesn't have yet. So therefore, so to take from somebody else, he can't say Ef Shibetakonis Chachamim.
So we don't give him the...
So on the face of it, we would say, that's the question. On the face of it, Rav Achba Yaakov is saying, we could say, fine, if you want to collect ziburis, then you're going to have to collect at a lesser value, considering how much it's going to be worth later in the season. But Rav Achba Yaakov is saying, then you're discouraging him from lending money at all, because now it comes out he loses in terms of ziburis because of the fact that he lent money. Where he's saying, if I hadn't lent you this money, if I had this cash available, I could have gone and bought 15 of ziburis, and now you're telling me because you have my money tied up by you, then therefore you're telling me if I want you as a Buddhist, I'm only going to get half as much. So Ella Omer of Acha Breidir of Ikka, E Ikka V'damuya, if you want to compare Rabba's case about Nissan versus Tishrei prices, if you want to compare it, L'ksubas Ishim V'daminen, compare it to the case where a woman is collecting from a
where a woman is collecting her ksuba, whereas we learned in ksubas and in other places, in Gittin, we also learned that a woman collects her ksuba from ziburis. So there we said, it's not discouraging women from getting married because, a woman wants to get married, tabla mesa tandu and all that, and therefore the fact that he's only going to get ziburis is not going to discourage her from getting married. Unlike a baal choy, we said if he's only going to get ziburis, he may say, I'm not going to bother lending money at all. So we're talking about, let's say, a case, so you want to compare, you have a case of ksubas isha. The ksubas isha dinim ziburis, because a woman collects a ksuba from ziburis, v'i omri le'i, habli beninis betzir purta, suppose then that she says, I'd like beninis, but I'd like less of it. So again, instead of you giving me 15 of ziburis, you'll give me 12 of beninis. Omallah, so now you can tell her, ishak l'kedinach, if you want to take according to your din, shkel kedahashta, then fine, take at the current price. If you want bainness instead, then I'm going to give you bainness based on the nissen prices, which are going to be higher than the current tishrei prices, and therefore you're going to get less bainness. So now you have no way of slugging that up, because the fact is, she is entitled only to ziburis. You can't say the Torah made her position stronger, or the Chacham made her position stronger, shloi tinodelis, because the fact is, she doesn't have that stronger position. In fact, by the way, Tosfos says, the Gemara could have equally well answered that we are still talking about a Baal Choyv, and we're talking about where he'd like less Idis, where instead of 12 of Benis, he's willing to take 10 of, he wants 10 of Idis. But once we said Nizokin and Baal Choyv, so then we mentioned Ksubas Isha to kind of round it out. We're going to learn in tomorrow's Gemara that you have those three. You have a Nizek gets Idis, a Baal Choyv gets Benis, Ksubas Isha gets Ziburis. So therefore, we tend to think of them as a group like that. So once we went through the Nizek and the Baal Choyv, then the Gemara wants to continue with the case of Ksubas Isha. Anyway. Okay, so that answer, so fine. So in other words, so all of these Chachamim, Rav Acha Bar Yaakov and Rav Acha Bar Rav Ikka, are all saying, Abaya, you brought in this point that your Rebbe, that Rabba said about Nissen versus Tishrei prices, really it has nothing to do with Nizokin. You can apply it maybe in the case of a Baal Choy. You can apply it in the case maybe where a woman is collecting Huxova. But not in the case of Nizokin. Nizokin, you can't make that distinction between Nissen and Tishrei prices, because the Torah has strengthened his position, and you can't say, therefore, that it means that if he wants to collect from something less, from Beninis or from Idis, he should lose out because of that. So then the Gemara says, Mekol Makom Kasha. Well, the bottom line is we're left with a Kasha then. So what does it mean? Where on the one hand we say you have to pay for Meitav, and on the other hand we can say you say that you can pay with Afilu Subin. So what's the deal? Omar Rava. So Rava says it means Kol the Yohiv Lemi Meitav Leisiv Lei. It means whatever he's giving him has to be given from Meitav. So in other words, if he's giving him land, then he has to give him if he's giving him, for example, he's giving him subin, fine. Yoshib Ladabas Chopakesip after the subin. If he's gonna give him subin, it has to be the best subin, the best brand that he has. No matter what, within any given kind of asset that he's gonna give him, it always has to be the best that he has of that asset.
Even though brand is considered lower.
Even though brand is less. I mean, you have to go and sell the brand. You can sell the brand to somebody for animal food, or you can use it to make raisin bran or something. And the point is, in other words, there's going to be different qualities of brand itself. So if the guy has $100 worth of brand, we're going to tell him you have to give from the idis of your brand, says Rob. But what do you mean? What do you mean? The fact is the pasuk is the best of his field. Why are you now saying that Meitav has to refer even to Metalchlin? He also a pop of Rahuna Breda Vishuma De Rab when a pop of and Rahuna Breda Vishua came from the Yeshiva. Bay Rab literally means the house of Rab, but they lived long after Rab had passed away. So Bay Rab just means the Yeshiva. Anyway, so when they came from there, Pershua, they explain what's going on. Kol mili metavu. Any kind of metalplin is considered metav. In the sense, the Eloi mizdaben hocha, mizdaben mimasachrisi. Even if you can't find anybody to buy it over here, you can always find somebody at a different place. You can take it someplace else and sell it over there. So therefore, even bran, because metalplin, right. So even bran is considered metav, because you eventually can convert it into cash. You may not be able to over here, but you can always find somebody else, someplace else, who needs bran. You sell it to a cereal manufacturer, and then you get money for it. Levar me'ara, with the exception of land, because land not being movable, then you need a delays of levi meitav. Why is the Torah saying you have to give from meitav? Kiheka delikwit salay zvina, because you want people to jump at the opportunity to buy it, and therefore, in other words, like we said before,
The Nizik, the Pashtus, doesn't need another field. He wants cash to make up for the hezek that was caused to him. So therefore, you want to give him something that he can very easily sell, that he can very easily and quickly sell. Idis is that. So therefore you give him idis. But when it comes to Metalpin, we tell him, look, we understand you don't want $100 worth of bran. Fine, go find somebody, and you should be able to find somebody easily enough who'll take that $100 worth of bran off your hand and give you $100 instead. So therefore, that's how we define Meitav. So that answers the question. When we say Meitav means dafka when you're paying with land. When we say afilu suben, it means anything else. There is within that a machlokas rishonim. What about, for example, suppose that the nizik has other metalpilin as well as bran? Can he say, I just want to pay with bran? Or can the nizik say, you know what, if you only had bran, fine, I would have to accept it. But because you have other things, then I want one of those other things instead. So it's a machlokas haposkim. The halacha is that we do give the mazik the choice in the matter. If he wants to pay with subin, then he can pay with subin. The nizik can't say, yeah, but you also have cash available. I want the cash instead. We say he doesn't have to do that. He can pay with his subin if he wants to. But if he's going to pay with land, then we're saying it has to be with me.
The mazik is the upper hands.
So in that sense, the mazik gets a break. What we're going to have later in the masechta, we're going to have other examples, not really the upper hand, but we do have the example we're going to talk about in a few days, for example, about Tchas Nevela. You have suppose, for example, I have a burr and your shur falls into it and gets killed. So now you have a dead body. The dead body itself, we consider that goes towards the payment. For example, we say that the damage was 200, but the Nevela itself is worth 20. So fine, I only have to pay you 180. So there are cases where we give the mazik a certain amount of a break. And this would be another example where we're saying that as far as what he pays with, given that we're saying that any metalpin are considered meitav, then it means he has his choice. The same way, for example, let's say he had two fields of idis. We're not going to say, obviously, the nizik is not going to get to choose which one he's going to get, right? Whichever one the mazik wants to give him, then that's fine. Mm-hmm. The same way when it comes to metalpin, now that we're establishing that all metalpin are meitav, then the same rule is going to apply across them. We're not going to distinguish between different categories of metalpilin. We're going to say all of them are considered meitav, and therefore you can give. So again, you do have Rishonim who argue otherwise, that Amar argues otherwise. However, in Shulchan Aruch and the Nosa Kalim, that's how it's passed. When it comes to two fields of idis, of course, everybody agrees that he can choose which one to give. But the point is, when he has money and he also has subin, he can choose to pay with the subin if he wants, and that's fine. The nizik can't say, I don't want subin, I want money. Yeah.